And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can check out the podcast, take it with you on demand 24/7 by searching for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. Good Tuesday morning to you. A long night here in New Hanover County for individuals following a local politics. The New Hanover County GOP held their convention last night. Every 2 years, they elect new leadership, and that was the agenda. That was the business of the event and the organization last night. There is new leadership here for the New Hanover County Republican Party, spearheaded by John Hinnett, who was successful in his race to become the next chair. We look forward to catching up with John in the weeks and months to come as we get into the ever-important municipal elections, which will be taking place a little bit later on this year. Congratulations to him and his team, and we look forward to following along that and, again, keeping track of those very important municipal elections for the city of Wilmington, as well as our beach towns, Wrightsville, Carolina, Curie Beach. They'll be having their elections as well. We'll keep you up to date on everything going on locally with that. Before we can get into any local news this morning, we have got an update on what has been a very interesting couple of days on the national stage in regards to the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. Spent a great detail yesterday morning going over what was Friday afternoon with Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky making his way to the Oval Office and getting into a shouting match with J.D. Vance and Trump over this mineral rights agreement, which, as you heard yesterday morning, as we talked about, everybody knew the plan. It was a 3-4-step plan. The first part of that was signing the mineral rights deal that Trump had cooked up. Zelensky, for whatever reason, thought he was going to try and bully the Trump administration into getting security guarantees on Friday. Everybody told him to relax and just go forward with the mineral rights deal. That's the first step. He decided that he was going to roll the dice, and he didn't roll very well at all. It completely backfired on him. And we've got additional fallout this morning. We learned yesterday afternoon that the White House, the Trump administration, has halted military aid to Ukraine after that conflict that took place Friday within the Oval Office. President Donald Trump and his administration announced a pause to all U.S. military aid to Ukraine following that tense Oval Office meeting with the Ukrainian president last week. All military aid, including weapons in transit and in Poland, will be cut off effective immediately until Trump believes that Zelensky is willing to negotiate peace with Russia. A Department of Defense official told that to Bloomberg News yesterday. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth will be the one that is in charge of carrying out this decision from the administration. A senior Trump official told Fox News last night, quote, "This is not a permanent termination of aid. It's a pause," adding, quote, "The orders are going out right now." The pause follows a contentious White House shouting match between Trump, Zelensky, and VP J.D. Vance, in which U.S. officials repeatedly stressed that Zelensky did not appear grateful enough for America's continued support for Ukraine. Trump urged Zelensky to be, quote, "more appreciative," and on Monday threatened Zelensky, quote, "won't be around very long if he doesn't commit to good faith peace negotiations." And that's really kind of the question at hand this morning. And it was a question starting on Friday afternoon when all of this blew up. Why is the Ukrainian president acting in this manner? Now, there's no question about it. He and his country have been through hell over the last couple of years. And I don't think there's any place to minimize that. You talk about the bloodshed that has been enacted on the Ukrainian people. No question about that. But we are in a position right now as a world, not a nation, not just a couple of countries talking, but at a worldwide level where you have a strong leader, an incredibly strong and effective leader back in the Oval Office. And there's no question about it. When the United States has strong leadership, that permeates throughout the world. When the United States has weak, useless, feckless leadership, like we may have seen over the last 4 years under Joseph Robinette Biden, that also permeates throughout the world. And I mean, you can just look at the Russia-Ukraine beginning of that going back to 2022 as the example. you had President Joe Biden asked about this, asked about Russia amassing troops on the Ukraine border. Well, what are you going to do? And Joe Biden's response is, well, you know, listen here, Jack, it depends. If it's just a minor incursion, then I guess we're not going to worry about it. Giving the green flag to Vladimir Putin to invade Ukraine. What goes on in the United States, you know, the election of our president and the impacts that that has on the worldwide stage is incredibly obvious and evident. There were two wars that broke out and still continue to this day because of Joe Biden's weak, useless leadership. The war between Hamas operating in Gaza and Israel and Russia and Ukraine. Both of those things happened exclusively under the watch of the previous Democrat president and Joe Biden. And there was no question that this was going to continue under his leadership. Joe Biden had not spoken to the Russians, had not spoken to the Russian president in Vladimir Putin in years. No open dialogue between the United States and the Kremlin. You've got an ongoing war brewing in Europe, and the White House, the previous president, is not even communicating with Russia. No side is going to, quote unquote, win the war. And I'll put that in air quotes, indicating that Ukraine is not going to take over Russia. Russia is obviously incapable of taking over Ukraine. The war's been at stalemate, essentially, for years at this point. There's not going to be a traditional winner or loser. And so what does that mean? It means that we need to transition into ceasefire and peace talks. And how were we ever going to transition into that phase of this war with an administration, with a White House that was unwilling to speak to one party? Was just completely shut off the communication channels. Essentially buried their head in the sand and pretended and acted like if we just close our eyes and go la 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 la, the war doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. Meanwhile, you've got two countries that are battling it out over in Europe and have been doing so for years. So Zelensky, if he truly cares about peace and truly cares about ceasefire and truly cares about an end to this war, he had a golden opportunity on Friday, and I still believe he does, has a golden opportunity with Trump in the White House to get this thing over with. Both parties are going to have to come to the negotiating table, and both sides are not going to get everything that they want. Geopolitics is incredibly complicated. War is incredibly complicated. And there's not going to be, in this case, a traditional winner or loser. Both parties are going to have to come to the table. There will be concessions by both sides, and hopefully the bloodshed and the war will end. And so when you've got the Trump administration now that is seriously questioning whether Zelensky wants peace or not, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's a fair question to ask because he came to the United States on Friday and seemingly spiked the football for God knows what reason. I had no idea what his intentions were. No idea what the hell he was thinking getting into this pissing match with Trump and Vance in front of the American media on Friday. It's completely out of the realm of anything that was thought was going to happen before this meeting. And that was blatantly obvious by the video and pictures of the Ukrainian ambassador with her head in her hands, being completely shocked by what she was witnessing unfold in front of her in the Oval Office. She was shocked by what she was hearing. Zelensky then had, you know, a 30-some-odd minute interview with Bret Baier just hours after this took place, where he had the opportunity to apologize and walk it back, and he refused to do so. And so this decision from the administration yesterday to temporarily halt aid until Zelensky and until the administration believes that Zelensky is, quote, committed to good faith peace negotiations, end quote, makes a lot of sense. Trump had this to say, quote, now maybe somebody doesn't want to make a deal. And if somebody doesn't want to make a deal, I think that person won't be around very long. That person will not be listened to for very long because I believe that Russia wants to make a deal. I believe that certain people of Ukraine want to make a deal, very much indicating that he's talking about Zelensky. On Sunday, Zelensky said that, quote, an agreement to end the war is still very, very far away and no one started those steps yet. A statement that Trump blasted, calling the worst possible way to describe their meeting. Trump said on social media yesterday, quote, this guy doesn't want there to be peace as long as he has America's backing and Europe in a meeting that they had with Zelensky. Stated flatly, they cannot do the job without the United States. That's in reference to this plan coming out from the UK Prime Minister, this four-step plan to peace, which really we read yesterday morning, the four steps don't seem to indicate and nothing in those plans seem to actually lead to any sort of peace in the future. They're words on a piece of paper. They're words coming out of somebody's mouth, but there's no articulate plan. You had a four-step plan here in the a 3-4-step plan here in the U.S., mineral rights agreement, security deal, then ceasefire slash peace, or ceasefire and then peace, 3 or 4 steps, depending on how you plot that out on the timeline. There was an actual plan that would have continued U.S. involvement, continued U.S. interest, and then a further long-term interest in an attempt to get back some $300 billion that the United States has invested into a stalemate war. Zelensky decided he wanted to be cute with it. He decided to pull a tactic, as we covered yesterday, that has been consistent for him. When you see somebody do things over and over again, that constitutes a pattern. For example, I have a pattern of doing a show. We do it each and every weekday morning, 7 to 8 a.m. live. That's a pattern when somebody does things consistently. And we know that Zelensky, from even the Biden administration, had to constantly be put in his place in regards to his rhetoric, in regards to his lack of appreciation, his unwillingness to be grateful for the copious, unbelievable amounts of aid that the United States has dumped into his country. He has a track record now of being ungrateful. He has a track record of things never being enough. Those aren't my words. Those are the words of the Ukrainian president when he got into a spat with Joe Biden back in 2022. After Joe Biden announced more aid on a phone call with him, he then cut off the president and said, yeah, but we need more. More, 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 more. It's never been enough for the Ukrainian president. You hear me talk about this all the time in regards to politics. Actions have consequences. Whether we're talking about local elections or whether we're talking about literal world peace, elections have consequences. The Ukrainian president tried to be cute, tried to upstage Trump, tried to upstage Vance, relitigate the issue in front of the American media. That was a grave mistake on his behalf. A grave, grave mistake on behalf of Zelensky. And so now he's going to have to deal with the consequences. If Europe finally wants to pick up their fair share, if Europe finally wants to deal with this war, let them have it. But I don't think they've got the manpower, the resources, or the negotiation tactics to actually make it happen. If you're somebody that actually wants peace, that's only going to come with U.S. involvement. There is no question in my mind about that. No question in my mind. So that's the latest. Trump is halting military aid temporarily, according to White House officials, until he believes and the administration believes that Zelensky is a fair partner and actually wants to see an end to this war and not just billions of more dollars from the U.S. taxpayers. That's going to be a very interesting thread. We will keep an eye on it and is likely going to be something that is talked about potentially tonight as the president is set to do and provide an address to a joint session of Congress. That's going to be coming up tonight at 9 o'clock. White House officials told Fox News Digital exclusively that the speech is themed, quote, the renewal of the American dream. and will feature four main sections: accomplishments from Trump's second term thus far at home and abroad. That's number one. Number two, what the Trump administration has done for the economy. Number three, the president's renewed push for Congress to pass additional funding for border security. And four, the president's plans for peace around the globe. And I suspect that we will get some additional comments from the president in that fourth section of his speech tonight. It is not a State of the Union. However, it is the president's first address to Congress since being back into the Oval Office, which happened back in late January. According to White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, she says that this will be, quote, must-see TV. Telling Fox News Digital, President Trump has accomplished more in 1 month than any president in 4 years, and renewal of the American dream is well underway. In his joint address to Congress, President Trump will celebrate his extraordinarily successful first month in office while outlining his bold, ambitious, and common sense vision for the future. The president will review his administration's accomplishments from his extraordinary successful first month in office, both here and at home. So that is going to be happening 9 o'clock tonight. Well, I'll be watching that live like many of you. We'll pull some various clips and the highlights of that, and we'll do a full recap on that coming up tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. We've got some other additional news this morning coming out of the state of North Carolina. State Senator Michael Lee has co-sponsored a bill to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion from public education, the incredibly detrimental DEI policies that have been enacted across school systems in North Carolina. We've covered the details here in New Hanover County with a 5-2 Republican-controlled Board of Education. And he's co-sponsored this bill alongside Senate leader Phil Berger, who is a Republican out of Rockingham County, and Senator Brad Overcash out of Gaston County. It's known as Senate Bill 227, and it was filed Monday in the state Senate. The bill text says, quote, an act to demonstrate the General Assembly's intent that students, teachers, administrators, and other school employees recognize that equality and rights of all persons, and to prohibit public school units from promoting certain concepts that are contrary to that intent, which is exactly what diversity, equity, and inclusion is. Or EDI, DEI, depending on where you are, the acronym changes. The bill's language refers to President Trump's recent executive order that ensures K through 12 recipients of federal funding comply with all applicable laws prohibiting discrimination. North Carolina receives over $3.1 billion in federal funding statewide for K-12 education, and the importance that state public schools remain in compliance to protect that educational funding is a huge push. It also states, quote, so-called DEI programs promote a worldwide view that demands people, especially young students, judge others based on their race, sex, or other factors, and attack true diversity of thought, stifle opportunity, and stoke division, end quote there from the legislation. The bill also outlines six specific actions that school units in North Carolina are not allowed to perform, including maintaining an office of diversity or other unit, promoting discriminatory practices or divisive concepts, or reference to or named diversity, equity, and inclusion. Senate Bill 227 also mandates that by September the 1st of this year, each public school must certify in writing to the Department of Public Instruction, that's the statewide organization, that it is in compliance, including any actions taken to achieve it. Then DPI will present a report by January the 15th of next year to a pair of legislative committees. State Senator Michael Lee said in a news release from Senator Phil Berger's office, quote, we want our educators to be equipped to teach our children in an environment that encourages students to speak frankly and ask questions without judgment. This bill removes divisive concepts and discriminatory practices from all aspects of public education and ensures our schools can focus on teaching our children, not indoctrinating them. Senator Berger said in the same release, quote, "We cannot teach our nation's history without acknowledging our past, but we can teach history without forcing our educators and students to embrace and adopt ideologies that are inconsistent with equality." This is not the first bill filed during the current legislative session seeking to eliminate DEI programs. Representative Brandon Jones out of Columbus County recently filed a bill in the state house that seeks to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in all state and local governments and ensures that no state or local money is used for any DEI programs or initiatives. So that is what is going on in the General Assembly. And again, you are seeing the trickle-down effect from the conversation in Washington, D.C. The Trump administration has set one of, I believe, set one of its key priorities on diversity, equity, and inclusion. It is an incredibly controversial, it is an incredibly discriminatory set of practices and policies and programs that have not been good for the bodies in which they've been thrust upon. Whether it's a public school system, whether it's a private business, we've seen the rampant cancellation of EDI programs in private entities and organizations over the last couple of weeks, really since Trump got into the Oval Office. We are seeing a mass exodus from this kind of indoctrination, from this kind of left-wing propaganda that is seeped into both the public and private sector. Trump has no authority to change what private business does in regards to EDI or DEI. He has really no authority at all. Yet, them alone, on their own accord, are making those changes. Themselves, they are deciding that these policies are no longer in favor. And so the end result of that is they are stripping these DEI policies straight out of their private businesses, with no help, with no guidance, with no push from the federal government. Now, you can talk about the greater political landscape that's going on. You can talk about some of the discussions that are happening nationally that are pushing these private entities to make that change, but they're not being coerced into doing so. They are making those decisions on their own accord. And it makes sense, because it turns out that so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion policies and programs are not actually following through on their stated name. They're not actually following through on their stated agenda. And specifically, Senate Bill 227 that we're talking about this morning here in North Carolina, introduced by State Senator Michael Leaf here from New Hanover County, it's complete and total liberal propaganda and indoctrination, where you have individuals within public school systems across the state literally being taught, based on their skin color, they are either an oppressor or they are oppressed. We are sowing the seeds of racial division in our most vulnerable young individuals across the state of North Carolina. For what reason? Nothing more than to keep this division going. Because the left flurries in division. Liberals and the leftist ideology does so well when there's division, hate, hateful rhetoric, and vitriolic things back and forth. They don't operate very well under peace and prosperity, and they're never in the favor of peace and prosperity. They're always trying to pin groups against each other. They're always trying to divide individuals. They do it within their own party. I mean, look at what's going on with these small little subsects, these small little groups within the Democrat Party, where you've got these small different ideological groups being pitted against each other as to who's the bigger victim. Is it the trans community? Or is it some other group? Let's pin them against each other and see who wins. That's exactly what goes on within Democrat circles. And it's why the platform of the Democrat Party, The policies of the Democrat Party have been pretty well rejected by the American people. We saw another example of that in November of last year. And so the Democrat Party has got a lot of work to do going forward. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. These policies, these platforms, these organizations, these groups, they're no longer in favor with the American people. There is an objection to the teachings of diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Not because people are against diversity. Not because people are against inclusion. Very similar to the aptly named Inflation Reduction Act, which rose the federal deficit and spent more taxpayer dollars on things like electric vehicle charging stations. The name diversity, equity, and inclusion does not actually promote policies that lead to those things. There's no inclusion within DEI. There's no diversity within DEI. It is an echo chamber of liberal propaganda. You get in line, you read off the same sheet of music, or you get out. It's not diverse. It's not inclusive. And I would make the argument that as I chat with you this morning, that the Democrat Party is the least diverse political party that we've seen in modern times, where they are so tied together on their platforms and their ideals. And anybody that dares speak against them, have a differing opinion, challenge them on something they believe, they fly off the handle and demagogue that individual. Case in point, Tulsi Gabbard. Case in point, RFK Jr. Individuals who, Tulsi Gabbard was the freaking vice chair of the Democrat Party less than a decade ago. She went from the vice chair of that organization to reamed by Democrat senators in the Senate back just a couple of weeks ago. Because she dared to speak out against the Democrat Party, in which there is no diversity, no equity, and no inclusions. It is a complete and total farce. So props to Senator Michael Lee. Props to Senate Leader Phil Berger on Senate Bill 227. We'll continue to track that as it moves through the General Assembly in what is a very busy, long session of the General Assembly thus far. Looking at the legislative website this morning, there are dozens of committee hearings that are taking place today. For our video listeners, this is the calendar for a Tuesday, March the 4th. It starts at 8:30 this morning, and you can see all of these committee meetings that are happening throughout the day, dozens of them that are taking place in a very similar schedule tomorrow and Thursday as well. Lots going on in the General Assembly this week. There's going to be things flying all over the place. I'll do my best to keep you up to date with everything going on there and for the news throughout the day for anything that happens outside of our live time slot here, 7 to 8 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Encourage you to give me a follow over on X.com at Nicholas M. Craig to keep up to date with breaking statewide and national news throughout the day, X.com/Nick Craig. We'll grab a quick break here. On the other side, tariffs. Yes, we've got some new news in regards to those tariffs in effect for Canada, Mexico, and China. We'll have those details coming up in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on this Tuesday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on this Tuesday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 by downloading the podcast. It is available in all of your favorite podcast apps. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, tap the subscribe and follow button, and you can take the show with you on demand on your own time. Before we get into some additional news this morning, I do want to update you on the weather front. We are expecting some pretty nasty weather across the state tomorrow. Here's the latest outlook from the Storm Prediction Center. They're out of Norman, Oklahoma. They have pretty much half of the state of North Carolina, pretty much from about Charlotte eastward and down into South Carolina under an enhanced risk of severe weather tomorrow. The biggest threat, if we go over to the wind category here, is destructive and very dangerous wind gusts. A great graphic put together by Gannon Medwick, the chief meteorologist over at WECT News, shows the timeline, and we're going to see those gusty winds pretty much all throughout the day tomorrow, and the possibility from severe storms will take place between lunchtime and about 4 p.m. So if you've got any plans that are going to take you out and about tomorrow, make sure you've got a way to get those weather alerts, get those weather warnings. And going back to the Storm Prediction Center map, there is the even a slight risk of some tornadic activity. Not super likely, but there are some tornadoes that are a storm system. The storm system is out there right now. It's moving through parts of Oklahoma and Texas this morning, prompting tornado warnings south of the Tulsa area as of right now. So this storm system that dumped a whole bunch of snow up into the Yellowstone area, severe storms across Texas and Oklahoma right now. That will continue moving its way east and make its way into our area through your afternoon hours tomorrow. So again, make sure you've got a way to keep those warnings with you. We'll take a look at it coming up tomorrow morning as well. Now over to some additional national news this morning. New tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China went into effect when you were asleep last night at midnight. They went into effect as President Trump's efforts to use trade measures to halt the flow of fentanyl into America has already been is now going on. Trump's 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico products came into force at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time this morning, a month after both nations were initially able to negotiate a pause on the implementation. And with that, there's also a 10% tariff on Chinese imports that Trump imposed last month, which doubled to 20% at that same time this morning. Trump implemented the levies after declaring the fentanyl crisis in America to be a national emergency and used his authority under the Internal Emergency Economic Power Act to impose stiff tariffs with the goal of forcing Chinese officials to rein in the flow of the precursor chemicals from China that are shipped to areas in South America, places like Mexico, where criminal cartels then actually use those precursor chemicals to make fentanyl, which then, of course, flowed across and did so for many years across our U.S.-Mexico border. The president has argued that China, Mexico, and Canada, quote, haven't done enough to crack down on deadly and illicit fentanyl imports to justify pausing the tariffs. Trump said in a Truth Social post last week, drugs are still pouring into our country from Mexico and Canada at a very high and unacceptable level. A large percentage of these drugs, much of them in the form of fentanyl, are made in and supplied by China. The president has also indicated that he aims to address the country's trade imbalances and get more factories to relocate to the U.S. through its tariff plan, charging countries that have been taking advantage of their trading partner, which is here, the United States. This was ahead of that announcement I mentioned yesterday morning as we were getting off the air that Trump was going to make a major announcement at the White House around 1:30 yesterday afternoon, and that was announcing a $100 billion investment that the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, which is a massive semiconductor company. They are one of the largest in the world. You've got TSMC and just a couple of others that actually manufacture semiconductors. TSMC is one of the largest, if not the largest, that announced yesterday that they would be making that $100 billion investment into the United States. With that, President Trump held a press conference as he continues to speak to the media, continues to have questions thrown at him. He continues to answer them. Again, irregardless of whether you like the answer that Trump is giving, you can't argue that he's not talking. Whether you like what Trump is saying or not, you can't say he's not speaking. This man takes questions from the media literally almost every single day. whether he's walking to a helicopter, getting on or off of a plane, gaggling with the media in the White House, whether it's the Oval Office or some other place in the White House, he's speaking to the media constantly. And when he's not speaking to the media, Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, and his other surrogates, including cabinet officials, are out there speaking to the media as well. There's never been more openness with an administration than what you've seen over the last month or so. It's just never happened. Even the first administration with Trump did not have this much media availability. It's insane how much availability the media has to the president. Never before have we seen that. And it is such a contrast from what we saw over the last 4 years, with Joe Biden hiding in the basement, going essentially MIA for weeks, if not months at a time, where we didn't hear anything from him except for pre-canned written statements that allegedly came from him that obviously he didn't write. Yet Trump speaks to the media, speaks to the American people through the media. So this is Trump yesterday in the White House speaking about some of these tariffs. Take a listen.
That one day, but so we're going April 2nd, but very importantly, tomorrow tariffs 25% on Canada and 25% on Mexico, and that'll start. So they're going to have a tariff. So what they have to do is build their car plants, frankly, and other things in the United States, in which case they have no tariffs. In other words, you build, and this is exactly what Mr. Wei is doing, by building here. Otherwise, they'll build, if they did them in Taiwan to send them here, they'll have 25% or 30% or 50% or whatever the number may be. Someday, it'll go only up. But by doing it here, he has no tariff, so he's way ahead of the game. And I would just say this to people in Canada.
That's the president yesterday in the Oval Office talking about this major announcement, TSMC making a $100 billion investment to produce and manufacture semiconductors here in the United States, talking about those tariffs. And, you know, I've not been, and I continue not to be, the biggest fan of this move from the Trump administration. You can talk to economists on both sides of the political spectrum, individuals that have worked very closely with the Trump administration. We've spoken with economist Dr. Vance Ginn here on the show. He was a very frequent guest on the old radio show. He worked in Trump's OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, under the first Trump administration. So this is a guy that is very much pro-Trump. And he has continually talked to us about the impact of tariffs, which is, in fact, a tax on the American people. We will see costs go up in the short term. Now, Trump can find ways to alleviate that. The president and his administration can do things to make that pain not as great. But this is a very risky move by the president. Why? Because if you look at one of the main reasons, I believe, that he had the electoral success that he did in November of last year, was not only because Kamala Harris was an awful presidential candidate, but the economy was a large driver of that election victory. I strongly believe that Trump's rhetoric on the economy and the pain and the pressure that the middle-class American public had been feeling for years was a main reason that they wanted a change. And so with Trump going forward with these tariffs and the arguments he's making about trade, I don't necessarily disagree with. Are we being taken advantage of in regards to trade? Yes. I think the president's assertment on that is very accurate. And so the question really is simply this. With this 25% tariff in effect now on Canada, Mexico, and 20% on China, with those in effect, can the administration get these tariffs rolled out, and can the pain be offset for the American public? And the question really is, can the American people deal with the short-term pain? And I don't know that the answer to that is yes. When you elected a president, and one of the major issues was the economy, and there's no question about it, tariffs cause an increase in prices for the consumer. Businesses do not eat the cost of tariffs, they pass it along. Meaning when you go and buy something, the cost is going to be obvious based on the barcode, based on the label, the price on the item, right? Walmart and Target and Best Buy and all these other big box stores and Amazon, they're not going to be eating the cost of that. They're going to be passing that on to you. meaning more pain for the American consumer. So does the American public have the stomach to deal with higher prices in the short term? I don't know that the answer to that is yes. I really don't think the answer is yes. So we'll see how this rolls out. This was a threat a month ago. Negotiations began, and here we are now with those tariffs in place, and we've got some retaliatory tariffs coming in from Canada we'll get into in just a second. Here's more from Trump, a Q&A yesterday in the Oval Office, again, talking about TSMC and their $100 billion investment. Here's what Trump had to say, a follow-up on tariffs.
On the tariffs, is there any room left for Canada and Mexico to make a deal before midnight, and should we expect those Chinese tariffs, the extra 10%, to take effect?
No room left for Mexico or for Canada. No, the tariffs, they're all set. They go into effect tomorrow.
Mr. President, just to follow up on my colleague's question.
And just so you understand, vast amounts of fentanyl have poured into our country from Mexico. And as you know, also from China, where it goes to Mexico and goes to Canada. And China also had an additional 10, so it's 10 plus 10. And it comes in from Canada, and it comes in from Mexico, and that's a very important thing to say. Yeah, please, go ahead.
So, again, all the points I think are good. I think what the president is saying is spot on. There is an issue with fentanyl flowing across our southern border. I mean, you don't have to be a data scientist to figure that out. You can look at the fentanyl deaths that have taken place, the opioid overdose deaths that have taken place in our country over the last decade. It's very obvious. And so he's attempting to do this in the short term. Again, from a negotiation standpoint, from an art of the deal tactic, it might be an attempt to bring these individuals to the table. I was hoping that this would have been dealt with over the last 30 days so that these tariffs didn't go into effect. Yet here we are this morning discussing these tariffs now fully officially in effect. And with that, we've got some news out of our neighbors to the north, the great state of Canada, as the president describes it. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced 25% retaliatory tariffs on American goods in response to Donald Trump's tariffs that went into effect at midnight. The retaliatory tariffs Canada is imposing will be on $155 billion worth of U.S. goods that are funneled to our neighbors to the north. Trump signed that executive order authorizing those tariffs yesterday, and now Canada has responded doing so. Trudeau said yesterday, quote, "There is no justification to these actions," pointing to the White House's argument that the flow of drugs, including fentanyl, into the United States warranted the tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China, though the amount of fentanyl coming across the northern border is very low. The prime minister followed up by saying, quote, "While less than 1% of fentanyl intercepted at the U.S. border comes from Canada, we have worked relentlessly to address the scourge that affects Canadians and Americans alike. We implemented a $1.3 billion border plan with new choppers, boots on the ground, more co-coordination, and increased resources to stop the flow of fentanyl. We appointed a fentanyl czar, listed transnational criminal cartels as terrorist organizations, launched the Joint Operations Intelligence Cell, and established a Canada-U.S. Joint Strike Force Task Force on Organized Crime. Because of this work in partnership with the United States, fentanyl seizures from Canada have dropped 97% between December 2024 and January 2025 to a near zero low of 0.03 pounds seized by U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Trudeau followed up and said, quote, "Canada will not let this unjustified decision go unanswered and announced that tariffs on American goods would also go into effect at 12:01 a.m. if the Trump tariffs go into effect as at midnight, which they in fact have. So we now have those retaliatory tariffs that are in effect from the Canadian side. Canada said it will start with tariffs on $30 billion worth of American goods, followed by tariffs on $125 billion of American products within 21 days. So they're doing a kind of staggered rollout of their tariffs. He continued by saying, our tariffs will remain in place until the United States trade action is withdrawn. And should the UF tariffs not cease, we are in active and ongoing discussions with provinces and territories to pursue several non-tariff measures. While we urge the U.S. administration to reconsider their tariffs, Canada remains firm in standing up for our economy, our jobs, our workers, and for fair deals. Trudeau said Americans will pay more for groceries, gas, and cars and could lose thousands of jobs as a result of Trump's tariffs. So obviously Canada not thrilled, not happy with what's going on. That's not necessarily a surprise or shock. This is a major blow to the Canadian economy. And, you know, for example, there's going to be a major blow to the gas prices in the Midwest, where most of the oil and gas that feeds the Midwest part of our country comes directly from Canada. And again, that goes back to the discussion about these tariffs. Can the American people, can their wallets, can their bank accounts deal with these tariffs in the short term? Because there will be immediate impacts. You will see things immediately start rising in price. And it will happen, and some of it will lag, some of it will stagger and rise over time. But in the interim, right now where we sit, can the American consumer deal with that? I don't think that's the case, and I think this is a miscalculation from the Trump administration. Trump's got smart people around him. I have faith in Trump. I have faith in the people that he has surrounded himself with, but I don't have to love every decision. And that's one of the things that I talk about this a lot. As conservatives, as Republicans, we're not a cult. We don't have this weird groupthink thing that the Democrats have, where everybody has to sing off the same sheet of music, everybody has to agree with every single person that's in their party 24/7, 365. We don't have that in the GOP. We don't have that in the conservative Republican circles. It's also a huge issue. I've argued that our greatest strength is our greatest weakness, and that's our individualness, our ability to look at something objectively, read, research, get details, get information, and make a decision as to what we want to do. We're free thinkers. We have thoughts. We can read the news. We can look at things. We can have discussions. These things can happen, and we're allowed to come up with our own thoughts. We're allowed to make our own opinion up on things. The left can't say that. So while I have faith in Trump, while I think he's surrounded himself with good people on an economic standpoint, I think this is a grave mistake. And the short-term gains, I don't think they're worth it. The analogy, is the juice worth the squeeze? You've heard that probably your entire life. I don't think that's the case with these tariffs, especially because of one of the main reasons for Trump's election was economic relief, economic security, and getting back to a prosperous America where the middle class can work hard and have discretionary money, discretionary income to go on vacations, to take trips. And instead of just being able to buy the needs, to have some money to purchase the wants, maybe the new TV for the living room, things of that nature, things that you don't need, but things that you want. Have that discretionary income, have that discretionary cash to do that. The previous administration was not in favor of allowing that sort of safety and security for the middle class. The previous administration thought that passing the Inflation Reduction Act, which allocated hundreds of billions of dollars worth of U.S. taxpayer dollars to stupid nonsense programs like electric vehicle charging stations and offshore wind turbines, was somehow going to cause the pain to be less for the regular middle-class American consumer. Yeah, it was a stupid decision by their behalf. They named it well. We're able to pull the wool over the head of the, pull the blanket over the head of many people and convince them that it was a good idea because it was called the Inflation Reduction Act. But as we saw the impacts, as we saw what it actually did, the amount of money that was wasted through those, through that idea and through that legislation, just didn't have any impact. Didn't cause inflation to go down. didn't cause things to change in any meaningful or significant way. It was nothing more than a PR stunt. And so when I say that the American people are seeking economic relief, they absolutely are. It's one of the reasons that Trump won. And so we've got to see what's going on. We're just going to have to see what goes on with this. There's no question about it that there is an issue with fentanyl. There's no question that the trade deficits, the trade inequities that take place between many countries needs to be addressed and needs to be dealt with. I'm not disregarding the substantive issues that we're discussing. I just don't think that tariffs are the best way to do it. So we'll wait and see. I hope I'm wrong. I hope there is no more pain. I hope there is no more pinching of the American middle class's paycheck and bank account and checkbook as this goes on. So we'll continue to track those tariffs. They are in effect, U.S. to Mexico and Canada, 25%, 20% to China, and Canada has responded with 25% retaliatory tariffs, at least in the interim. We'll continue to track that. Getting some breaking news out of the Associated Press this morning, as we were covering earlier, Trump has halted temporarily military aid to Ukraine. The Associated Press reporting, quote, without U.S. help, Zelensky has few options except to repair his relationship with the White House. That's coming out from the Associated Press, as this is likely to escalate over the next couple of days. It's, again, one of the major stories that we are going to be tracking. Before we get out of here on this Tuesday morning, I want to tell you a little bit about Ground News. It's a site and a service that I use each and every day to keep up to date with news, not only across North Carolina and the country, but even the world. One of the really cool features of Ground News is their feature called Blind Spot. It'll show you a particular news story and indicate whether there is a blind spot in regards to reporting, meaning it is being reported by all Republican or all conservative or all liberal news outlets. The blind spot feature is very cool over at ground.news. You can get access to unlimited access to the website and 40% off your subscription by visiting nickcraig.com/ground. Get access to ground.news and save 40% off your subscription. It's nickcraig.com/ground. I use ground.news each and every morning as we conduct the show here and get ready for it. nickcraig.com/ground for 40% off your subscription. I want to thank everybody for joining us on this Tuesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget that you can get bonus access, including those daily show notes, over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. We'll be watching the president's address tonight at 9 p.m. and have all those details coming up for you to Wednesday morning on the Nick Craig Show, live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and available wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day.